Thank you. talks about purity and holiness and all that. That's what it looks like. That's what the progress looks like. He's going to shift from talking about that to talking about the people that make that happen. Ministers. People who serve in ministry. And that's going to be the focus for the rest of the chapter. All the way there. So he's going to be showing, Paul's going to be showing us. He's going to try to inspire us to be passionate in ministry by showing us his passion first, and then Enemies, and then Epaphroditus. So we have three biographies here that will inspire us. So I find this section, this whole second half of the chapter, passionate sermon. Passionate sermon, or you could say passionate ministry. In verse 15, Paul brings up the startling possibility of him running and laboring and doing all this ministry and potentially ending up with nothing to show for it. Yes, the Philippians prepared to get in and be like the bad soil and the parables of the soil, or you know, like the wheat soil or the rocky soil, where they just temporarily hold on to the word and they let it go. If it happens, then Paul says, well, then I'll run and labor for nothing. The whole thing will be for nothing. And there was actually a question that came up in the Q&A last week after the sermon. That was a good question. It was a question about 1 Corinthians 15, 58, which is a verse that promises that your labor in the Lord will not be in vain. And the question was, how do we square that with Paul frequently talking about the possibility that his labor could be in vain? And I just do not have a good answer. It's one of those questions where I just didn't, well, instead of finding an answer, they gave up on me. So I studied this week, and I just want to quickly address it now before we move on. Here's what I have to say about that. The point of 1 Corinthians 15 is to assure us about the resurrection of Jesus Christ and our own resurrection. So that verse 15 is the last verse in that chapter, so the point of that verse is basically this. It's not a waste of time to be a Christian. It's not a waste of time to follow Christ, to devote your whole life to following Jesus Christ, because we know for sure that he rose from the dead, so he is who he claimed to be. It's not like the other religions where there's no proof, here we have proof. And so we know that he rose, we know that he's going to raise the people who are his followers, and so it's not a waste of your life to follow Christ. That's what it means to be a labor in the Lord, not in vain, because he rose from the dead, it's all real and all true. That's the point of the verse. What's the conclusion of that? The fact that all that labor in the Lord is not in vain is not a waste of time to serve Christ. Therefore, I can be lackadaisical in my work, because even if I put forth a cheesy effort, still, it's not going to be in vain. It'll work. No, that's not the conclusion. What Paul promises is the exact opposite conclusion. Still in the verse, 15:58, he says, always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. So the fact that it's not in vain doesn't mean that you can take it easy. The fact that it's not in vain means that you should give yourself fully to it. Why is that? Because here's why. Because even though the statement is not a waste of your life to follow Christ, even though that statement is generally true, still, it's possible for some of your efforts in that service to fail based on your efforts, the kind of effort you perform. And you can see that on a small scale. We all understand that on a small scale. So, if there's a new pile in the men's room this week, if we had done that, and then if you do that, you close, you put someone out there, say, close, over the next 24 hours, because you put a pile in, and you got to let it dry, and you get people to go in there and walk on it, you press up the pile down. You have to tear it up, it'll make a hole over. So, we put it right up there. We've generally laid that tile and spent all night doing that. And then he's put on a sign saying, look, I close the next 4 hours. And so he comes along and says, yeah, you have to put the sign up. Because 1 Corinthians 15, 58, man, so there's no way he's going to go in and wreck your work and ruin it and let you do it all over. Go ahead and put the sign. The fact is, God might let your title drop different, right? He sometimes does stuff like that. And so you go ahead and you take precautions. And I think what Paul's saying here is exactly the same thing, just on a bigger scale. 17. So look back at verse 17, Philippians 2:17. He says, but even if I have been going around like a tree bomb for one sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I'm glad and rejoice with all of you. You should be glad and rejoice with me. So Paul refers to the faith of the Philippian church here in two ways, two metaphors. One is a sacrifice, the other is a service. So let's look at that. Sacrifice. Basically, sacrifice is just a gift that a worshiper uses to express love to God. Okay? That's what sacrifice is. Typically, with an animal in the Old Testament times, it was an animal that would take an unblemished lamb or something like that, and it would bring to the temple, and the priest would slaughter it, put it on the altar, and burn it, and that would be the sacrifice. Why did God want people to do that? What's the point of sacrificing? Two parts. To understand what the sacrifice is all about. First, in the first place, it was a picture of evil. It was an illustration of the consequence of sin. And the appropriate punishment for sin, we don't know, the appropriate punishment is death. And so each time the people were forgiven a sin, they needed to understand that. They needed to do this. They had to kill an innocent animal, perfectly innocent, that would have died otherwise, a one-year-old lamb. And so they would look at that and say, that animal is dying in my place. I'm the one that deserves that punishment. And the lamb's taken instead of me. That was one of the purposes of the sacrifice, illustration. The other purpose was worship. Worship. The idea is you think something that feels valuable to you, like a perfectly good animal, and you just give it to the Lord as an expression of your love for it, because this is what love does, right? Gives. What you give gives typically love. If you're going to have a love relationship, there's going to be a giving. And so, the number one command in the whole Bible is what? Love God. Right? Love comes all over our whole being. Love God is a big command in the whole Bible. And so, that's what Jesus said is the most important one. And so, one of the most fundamental ways to worship God is give gifts. As gestures of love. He doesn't need anything to give it. It's just a way of giving love. So, sacrifices were an expression of love for God. And also, not just love, but also faith, or an expression of faith in God. Because you're never going to give something of great value to God unless you believe he's actually there. And unless you actually believe that he's not only there, but he's a rewarder of people who worship him. You can't believe that you're not going to give up anything of real value. So, take some faith to give to God. And also, faith, do what you're trying to supply your needs, because now you're taking this. eternal destruction. That's just turn the page. Go to chapter 4. Go to chapter 4. And you'll see here, Paul's talking about their financial support of his missionary work. In verse 18, he says, the gifts you sent are already surrender and offer an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. All the rest of different languages from the sacrificial system. This is a new and modern day sacrifice. So God is giving an animal, they gave financial support for the preaching of the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. And that was an acceptable sacrifice. You've got to think, not just giving money to missionaries, but any kind of generosity would count as if it's done in the name of Christ, would be a sacrifice. You see that in Hebrews 13, verse 16. Don't neglect to do good and to share, for God's pleased with such a sacrifices. Sharing. Just sharing. Some other examples. Hebrews 13, 15. Praise is no sacrifice. What we're just doing here, singing, that's a sacrifice. Prayer and revelation, pride, repentance and brokenness, contrition of sin, and Psalm 51, that's called a sacrifice. Romans 12, 1 says, your ministry of your spiritual gifts in the church, that's a sacrifice. So when you do ministry, souls of the people you're ministering to, to encourage somebody or instruct somebody, whatever you do, that offers a soul. You offer a soul to God. That's a sacrifice. That's Romans 15, 15 and 16. Ephesians 5 says love is a sacrifice. Hebrews 16 and 15 says all the needs are a sacrifice. So all of that is summed up in Philippians 6 and 15, which says everything that flows out of a life of faith counts as a sacrifice. Those are the real modern-day sacrifices. Those Old Testament animal ones are just illustrations. This is the real thing. So that's the first word, sacrifice. Remember, Paul describes the Philippian church ministry with two words, sacrifice, and then what's the other one? Service. The sacrifice is service coming from your faith. The other word, service. That particular word, that word refers specifically to the priestly service in the Old Testament. The Greek word liturgia. We get around liturgy for a minute. It's talking about priestly service. The priests were the ones who came to the temple. They were full time in the temple. This is their gift. They're full time. They come to the temple and minister to the people. They were the ones that actually did the sacrifices. They would slaughter the lamb, burn on the altar. They also had other roles. They had a teaching role, leadership roles. All that various different ministry in the temple. So that was their priestly liturgy. That was their priestly service. And Paul uses that word to describe the temple. He says he compares the community and the whole church of Philippi, the stuff that's flowing out of their faith. He describes those actions as not a sacrifice that pleases God, but a priestly service that pleases God. Okay? It's the church. That's Paul's description of the church. The sermon today is like a theology that looks on ecclesiology, churchology, the doctrine of the church. Okay, so they're going to learn here about what the church is all about. This is the way Scripture looks at the church as a priestly service. Now, just think about that for a second. Does that change the way you think about coming to church? No. You know the goal of the church is, think about what they have to our consumer mentality that's part of our culture. When it comes to church. Let's face it, we've had this mentality in our church because it's better than our culture because we're served everywhere we go. Right? Everywhere we go, we need customer service. Every business is in business, stays in business with customer service. We don't have that in our business. So we just get trained to think of a customer. That's right. I'm always in there, I'm serving. And I need good service. And so we bring that into the church. What does a pastor do? A pastor shops around, finds a place with the best service, and stays there until they're no longer satisfied. Comes around, and they'll find that they can business elsewhere. We bring that mentality into the church. And what happens? The pastor says, did you walk in here this morning with the mentality of being a customer or a priest? pastors. All they're talking about now is the church. And God is going to make it their own. Now, let me explain something here. Because let me just say, it's perfectly okay for you to come to church in order to get your spiritual needs met. That's not a bad motive to go to church. But in fact, you have to believe you should do that. The Bible calls you to do that. You should come to church to be fed spiritually, to come to learn, to come to church to minister, to buy all the spiritual gifts. I should expect you to know that everybody's spiritual gifts are going to be benefiting you. You're going to get grace from God through those. God invites you today. He invites you to come in His house and receive from Him what He calls a banquet of blessing. That's a good motive. We should do that. The point here isn't that. The point here is simply that should be your only motive for going to church. To be your only objective. The way that your spiritual needs get met when you come to church is only when all the other people have a priestly attitude. Right? And then they're serving you. With their spiritual gifts. That's how spiritual needs get met. So the only way your needs will be met is that other people have a priestly attitude. The only way their needs will be met is you come there with a priestly perspective. And even more important than meeting each other's needs in the church is understanding why we're meeting each other's needs in the church. It's not that we just want to be nice people and be philanthropists. We know that the work of God calls for sacrifice and priestly service to God that's pleasing to Him. To honor Him and worship. Now, here's the thing that's really interesting about this. These words, sacrifice and service, are singular, not plural. So the whole church, they're singular, not plural. That's interesting. Because he's for this whole church full of people. He refers to all their stuff that they're doing as a sacrifice and service. So you take all the activities of faith, all the expressions of love, all the expressions of worship, all the praise, all the good deeds, all the gifts, all the faith, all the love, everything, everything to do in the church, put it all together and wake up when you have the Philippian church's sacrifice that they're offering up. The whole jungle of that is their sacrifice of worship. That makes me wonder. You know, I was studying that this weekend, thinking about this angular thing. It makes me wonder, what does the Agape Bible Church sacrifice look like? From the point of view of heaven, what, on an ethical Sunday, what actually rises up from the southwest corner of the gate in Huron to heaven on a given Sunday? What's it look like? Because on average Sunday, what we've got here are hundreds of expressions of faith, hundreds of acts of righteousness and holiness, gestures of love towards one another, expressions of love for God, all for the sake of Christ. You see there are hundreds of those, all mixed together with some unrepentance, right? The same thing is, some of these people have unrepentance in and that's contaminating this sacrifice. But again, any good thing that someone said over the world's purchase from us, not rebelling against God, disobeying. Some have a very thorough and deep knowledge of God, others on a spiritual maturity level, wisdom level. So you just take it all in, you gather all of the whole countries, all of it, in one giant pot. That's what we're looking at about that far. Sacrifice and service from the Agape Bible Church. Faith. And the main purpose of this verse, beloved, and just hear this. Everybody just look up here for a second. This is important. The main message of this passage is to show us the immense value of that sacrifice. This is something we need to understand about what the church is and how God looks at it. It is more.
scientists, or a painter, or a missionary, or even an apostle.
Christians, what kind of passion we have for ministry in the church if we really believe that. So Paul's saying, I'm going to get a job. says, I can't drink this cup. And pours in the dirt. Satisfaction than anything you can do with your own life. Giving it for yourself. It's the reason we keep our life for ourselves, because if you do that, you'll be happy. There's one of these times that we just, every time, at the end of every time this week, when I just been lazy, you know, I don't want to do my work, and I just been nuts, and I just flake out of work.
Thank you. Thank you.
of how often I say the one is built together is because of the sin that Thomas I see in the New Testament.